this week. We open Chumash Vayikra, otherwise known as Toras Kohanim. And indeed, the subject matter is very much relating to Inyone Korbanos. And I noted that although we are in our 16th year of Shiurim here, Harei Anu Kivnei Sheshes Reishana, we have never had a Shiur in Parshas Tzav. And the reason why is because it normally falls so close to Pesach, or in a leap year, so close to Purim, that it lost its mazel, and between one thing and another, we've never had a Shiur in Parshas Tzav. And this was pointed out to me, and I recall fondly Michael Miller, Aleph HaShalom, who recorded the Shiurim for a number of years, and he of course had all the statistics in front of him, and there was a gaping hole in Parshas Tzav. So I'd like to make amends, especially as Vayikra and Tzav are such a almost inseparable unit in any case. If anyone could tell that pasuk is from Parshas Tzav and not from Parshas Vayikra, that's a person who is well versed in Torah. So let us, as this time next week in Mitzvah Hashem, we will already be embarking on Inyone Pesach. So let us take a look at Parshas Tzav and yet see how all of the korbanos, in a sense, the world of korbanos blends together. So Tzav Perek Vav, pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Limor, Tzav es Aaron ves Bonav Limor, Zos Toras Ha'olam. So we are introduced here to the laws of the Ola. And the truth is that already with these words, Zos Toras Ha'ola, the question will present itself. For the implication is that the korban of an Ola is one that we haven't yet met, and we are now being introduced to it, which of course is not the case. If we open up the beginning of Vayikra, it begins with Korban Ola, Im Ola Korbono. In fact, with every single possible type of Ola that there is. Min HaBakar, Min HaTzon, Min HaOf, every type of Ola. And therefore, it's a simple question. How does Parshas Tzav introduce us to the Ola when we've already been introduced to the Ola? And this is discussed by the Sforno in his own characteristic brief way. And the truth is that it's not only the case with regards to Ola, but many other korbanos that we will have met before, they will be presented anew in Parshas Tzav. Zos Toras HaChatos, Zos Toras HaOshom, etc., etc. And the Sforno makes a general characteristic comment, which is very interesting. And that is that we have met these korbanos last week, next week. We've been introduced to them. But the focus of Chumash Vayikra has been, Parshas Vayikra, pardon me, has been predominantly in terms of the particulars, in terms of the practicalities, the maaseh korbanos. Parshas Tzav will go over each of these korbanos and add, through these extra details, an insight into the korban. Toras Ha'ola. Toras HaChatos. What's it all about? And that's a very interesting division between the very same korbanos that will appear, shall we say, in Gashmias form in the first of the parshas, and then in a more ruchnius inherent Mahuti way in Parshas Tzav. And I would like to present just one nugget of Toras Ha'ola, which will lead us on to another very interesting discussion. It's most remarkable to note that as much as we call it Toras Kohanim, and the Kohanim are B'nai Aaron, and Aaron is the Avtipus, he is the archetypical Kohen, he is the Kohen Gadol. He is not mentioned by name as a person, throughout Parshas Vayikra. I never noticed that until it was pointed out. You will find the Kohanim are referred to as Bnei Aaron, yes. Vizarku Bnei Aaron HaKohanim, yes. But there will never be a reference to Aaron as a person. You don't find it until Parshas Tzav. And before us we have another division between the two. He is the first person to be mentioned. Tzav es Aaron ves bonav leimor. All of a sudden Aaron attains his identity and his status. And this is actually pointed out by the Medrash. And the explanation behind this, says the Medrash, is something quite startling. The absence of Aaron's name as a personality in Parshas Vayikra had a certain element of reprimand, of punishment, for his involvement in the Egel. That's quite a thing to say. Of course, it's a highly complicated situation. Aaron with the Egel, they came to him, Kum Aselanu Elohim, what's he to do? Ultimately, he's not deposed. Ultimately, I mean, if we ask the yes or no question, is Aaron okay or not okay? Ultimately, he's okay. He is the Kohen Gadol. But he didn't get off with nothing. There's a loud silence in Parshas Vayikra. That's very interesting. And the truth is, we need to ask at this point. Zolzain. Let's say it's true that Aaron has some form of role in the Egel, which is for us impossible to evaluate. But let's say it's true. Even so, are we not, by definition, when we talk about the Mishkan, are we not in the post-rehabilitated state after the Egel? The Mishkan itself is Mishkan HaEdus. Mishkan HaEdus, the Mishkan of testimony, testimony regarding what? The fact that Jewish people have fundamentally been atoned for and forgiven for the Egel. So this now becomes a most unusual situation because the Mishkan is up and we're discussing the halachas and everyone's okay again except Aaron. And that's backwards. That is entirely inverted because Aaron's role was the mildest. And he's still in trouble. He's still under a cloud. And everybody else, who was much more involved, and they're okay again. How can it be? How do they recover much quicker than Aaron? And this question is raised by Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Sefer Shenos Chaim. And he actually answers it by introducing another question. There are two korbanos that we are most familiar with. The korban ola and the korban chatos. And what do we know about them? Right? The korban ola, as its name suggests, implies, goes entirely up. That means the entire thing is brought on the mizbeach. Kalil. Completely. The chatos, well, some of it is brought on the mizbeach and some of it is eaten by the kohanim. This we know. Now, what's most interesting about this? This is also a inverted situation that we would have intuited. Because a chatos actually comes for something which is worse than an ola. When does a person bring a chatos? If they, albeit inadvertently, violated a serious aveira, if a person unintentionally violated a halacha of Shabbos, he has to bring a korban chatos. That's a serious thing, and it was active. What does an ola come for? An ola comes for a person who was in neglect of a positive mitzvah. Then he should bring an ola. So one, to use the classic terminology, is a prohibition, bekum aseh, actively. That's when you bring a chatos. The ola is for a prohibition, b'sheva al taseh. Or to put it into neater English, is it a transgression of commission or omission? Chatos is for a sin committed. An ola is for a mitzvah omitted. Which is worse? We prefer not to be in either situation. But if you had to choose, I mean, to actively violate an Aveira is worse. And lo and behold, if that is the case, the korban that comes to deal with the, so to speak, milder offense, goes more on the Mizbeach. It's more of a korban. You have to put it completely. Kalil. And the chatas, which comes for the greater infraction, you get a bit of a return. On your, at least the Kohanim do. So once again, how is it that the, where we would have anticipated the greater requirement for a korban, the korban is actually less on the Mizbeach. And Reb Shlomo Kluger says, the answer is actually embedded within the question. That is to say, the very mild nature, because it's less of an infraction. So on the one hand, there was less of a transgression, but on the other hand, when looking to make amends, there will be less of a feeling that one needs to make amends, because it was a milder problem. In other words, when a person brings a korban chatos, when a person has actively transgressed an aveira, they know they have a problem, and therefore they know they need to deal with it, and there's a korban to deal with it. But when a person, in a sense, is, I didn't do anything, and that was the problem, that one should have done something. But in a sense, it's the weakness of the problem is its strength. Because the very fact that it's not so bad means you don't feel so bad. And maybe you'll never deal with it. So that's the irony, that the Torah actually lays more emphasis and makes more of an asek, so to speak, out of the milder problem, so that you don't actually completely look past it on your way for real problems. That is the mystery of the lesser offense having the greater korban. Says of Shlomo Kluger, if we may say, and these are his words, matters of this nature we speak with trepidation, but if we may say, this perhaps will explain to us why Aaron was the last one to be fully forgiven for the eagle. Our question was, well, he did the least. He's not actually involved in the eagle. He was looking to control the situation and perhaps delay and all of those things. And they're all true. And if at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees still there is room to criticize Aaron, but how can you compare that mild criticism of Aaron to the full-on Maisei HaEgel that came? So how is he the last to be forgiven? The answer is for exactly the same reason, that because it was so much less, so Aaron was, on his level, that much less inclined to see the requirement for atonement. The Jewish people were in no doubt that they needed atonement. I mean, there was no avoiding the problem. Aaron would find it easier to avoid the problem. And therefore the Jewish people, because their problem was greater, it was easier to spot, and they dealt with it much quicker. But what's amazing is, when you think about it, says Reb Shlomo Kluger, the relationship of Aaron and the Jewish people actually mirrors the relationship of an Ola to a Chatas. In other words, the requirement to stress a milder problem because it may otherwise be ignored, and the less requirement is to identify the larger problem. And thus we understand, says Reb Shlomo Kluger, it's a fascinating comment, that Aaron's, he's not mentioned in Vayikra, and when he comes in together with the Ola. Because actually Aaron's introduction into Chumash Vayikra is exactly mirrors the nature of the Ola. Zos Toras HaOla. Daber El Aaron. Taves Aaron responded to more Zos Toras HaOla. So that is a most fascinating comment. Of course, Ru'uyim Hadvarim for the great Gaon of Shlomo Kluger. Now, when we talk about the Ola, the Pasuk goes on to say, Hi ha'ola al-mokta, of course the entire ola goes on the mizbeach and it burns the whole night, al-mokta al-mizbeach kol ha'layla, which leads into the mitzvah in the morning of Trumas Hadeshen, right, of the special mitzvah of removing the ashes. That's the first avoda of the day. And It's interesting to note that this pasuk, which describes the ola, and the ola now represents all of those korbanos that are on the mizbeach the whole night, is actually part of a small group of mitzvahs called mitzvos shezmanim balayla, mitzvahs that apply throughout the night. And the special distinction that these mitzvahs have is that they are the subject of the very first discussion in the entire Talmud. And the way that that comes to be is because the first question that is raised by the first Mishnah in Brochas is about a nighttime mitzvah. Me'eim asai korin kriyat shema be'arvis, or be'arvin. And the Gemara discusses from when do we read nighttime Shema, and until when do we read nighttime Shema. And thus, into the fray, we begin with nighttime Kriyat Shema, but before you know it, the Mishnah brings in other mitzvahs, various other mitzvahs that are also nighttime mitzvahs. It discusses the burning of the korbanos, which is what our pasuk is talking about. It discusses certain korbanos that can only be eaten for a day and a night, meaning that you have the following night, the whole night. And what's interesting about all of these is that the Mishnah says two things about them. Number one, all these mitzvahs, in principle, apply throughout the night. They have the whole night. Except, as we know, the rabbis came and they limited the time. They brought it back. Ad chatzos. You have until chatzos. This is potentially of import even when it comes to Afikoman in a couple of weeks' time. For even if in principle the Korban Pesach could be eaten the whole night, but there's a lot of room to say that it's brought back until Chatzos, like all Korbanos, that you have the whole night in principle. The Rabbanan said until Chatzos. It's a psychological push. When a person feels they have the whole night, before you look around, it's already the next day. But when you feel a certain sense of pressure, that I don't have the whole night, I only have until Chatzos, the moral of the story is you'll deal with it before you go to sleep. Otherwise, the person will say, I'll have a bit of a nap, and naps tend to expand to fit exactly the shape of the night, and then a little bit more. And that's the worry that it's a classic Siag LaTorah. It's a classic protective measure, not to neglect the mitzvahs. Okay. Anyone who's seen the Mishnah in Brachos, that's more or less a summary of its contents. Why do I mention this here? There is a fascinating comment of Rashi. We just described, and if we could summarize again in one sentence, you have all of these mitzvahs on a Torah level that you have the whole night, but the rabbi said you only have until Chatzos to make sure that you get moving. Says Rashi, one of the mitzvahs mentioned in the Mishnah, namely the burning of korbanos, there was no siag made. There was no protective measure made. The burning of the korbanos is not restricted until chatzos. If they didn't do it before chatzos, they can do it after chatzos. It was not subject to this protective decree. The other mitzvahs, yes. The eating of the korbanos and the reading of Shema, yes. But the burning of the korbanos, no. No such decree was made. Why is it mentioned in the Mishnah? It's only mentioned in the Mishnah as part of the general list of mitzvahs, as another example of a mitzvah that's a nighttime mitzvah that you have the whole night. That's all. But it was not subject to the decree of Chatzos. And of course, this comment of Rashi threw Rishonim and Achronim into disarray. Because, if we may already borrow from the music of a couple of weeks' time, Man ishtana ha-mitzvah hazos mikol ha-mitzvahs. Why should this mitzvah be any different? It's a nighttime mitzvah, they have the same concerns, and Rashi says, no such protective measure was ever made. You got the whole night, and the rabbis didn't say anything to the contrary. They didn't pull it back. Why not? Where does its protected status come from? And there are many, many questions, many answers that are offered. But there is a classic response or explanation of this Rashi that begins by referring us to a principle of the Taz, the Turei Zahav, And we refer to this from time to time. The Turei Zahav propounds this theory, this principle, in three places in his commentary, in Urachaim, Yerodea, and Choshen Mishpat, each one in its slightly different form, but the principle is the same. And this is it. We have a concept of Siag LaTorah, protective measures of Chazal. How would we describe that? Well, very simply, they are things that are permitted on a Torah level, but the Rabbanon place them off limits to protect the actual thing that's forbidden on a Torah level. I mean, that's as simple as you can get in a description of Siag LaTorah, a protective fence. By definition, everything that's also from the Torah, pardon me, everything that's also from the rabbis is mutter from the Torah. And by definition, if it wasn't mutter from the Torah, you wouldn't need the rabbis to answer it. Okay. However, there are certain situations where something is not only permitted on a Torah level by virtue of just not having been forbidden, but the Torah makes a point of telling you that it's permitted. It is not only mutter. The Torah was matir it. The Torah went out of its way to let you know that this situation is mutter. Those circumstances, says the Taz, are off limits. The rabbis will not impose protective decrees and forbid something on a rabbinic level that the Torah made a point of saying is permitted on a Torah level. And the reasoning, if we may advance, is very simple. What is the entire goal of Siag LaTorah? Not only is it to protect, but as we've mentioned many times, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman says that the idea of an Issur Rabbanon, in a sense, is to seek to fathom from within what the Torah expressly forbade, what the Torah wishes you to avoid. So if the Torah said, don't do malacha on Shabbos, so if one ponders it, you understand that the Torah wants you to avoid malacha on Shabbos. So along come the rabbis and say, and so then don't even talk about it. And so on and so forth. In other words, the atmosphere around what the Torah expressly pervade in order to create a field of what the Rabbanon fathom the Torah wishes. If that's true, then we can well understand that when the Torah makes a point of saying that something is permitted, there is no way that we would conclude that the Torah really wishes you to answer it. Because the Torah explicitly devoted space to saying that it's permitted. And therefore that is, in a sense, a signal that there is no such wish from the Torah to avoid it, and the rabbis do not. This is how it begins, the classic answer to the question that Tosos and other Rishonim ask. When certain special days fall on on Shabbos, the mitzvahs are suspended. And we know that remains true in our time. Rosh Hashanah, no shofar. First day Sukkot, or any day Sukkot actually, no lulav. Megillah in Yerushalayim. Purim on Shabbos, no Megillah. Why? The person may come to carry. So the Rishonim ask an interesting question. I think everyone here has been to a bris tefillah on Shabbos. In principle, we should have exactly the same concern. There are infinitely more things that one could inadvertently carry for a bris. One would have expected, for the similar logic, to let the bris be suspended. There's a mitzvah to do it on the eighth day. Okay, there's a mitzvah to blow a shofar on the first of Tishrei. What can you do? Well, there are other concerns. So it's interesting. And once again, why is it that this mitzvah did not receive the same treatment as others? That when the eighth day falls on Shabbos, do we do the bris and mazel tov? Whatever. Why not suspend it? You may come to carry. Says the Turei Zahav, the reason why, it's because if you look into the Talmud in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, you will see that the Talmud derives the notion, the halacha, that if the eighth day falls on Shabbos, the bris goes ahead. It learns it from a pasuk. In the beginning of Tazria, it says, Uvayom Hashmini, and did not need to say the word Uvayom, because it's already said Shivas Yomim, Could have just said Uvashmini. Uvayom, the extra word Vayom, means on that day, come what may, even if it's Shabbos. Uvayom afilu b'Shabbos. That is how the eighth day came to be cleared for Mila, when it falls on Shabbos. Says the Taz. If that is the case, then there is no way that the Rabbanim will suspend it. Because the Rabbanim are saying, listen, generally speaking, on the eighth day one does the Mila. But when it falls on Shabbos, no. But here is the Torah specifically talking about the case of the eighth day falling on Shabbos and saying that it's Mutter. Once the Torah has declared this very case Mutter, it's off limits for the Rabbanim. They didn't suspend the Mila. That's the famous explanation of the Taz, and there's a great deal behind it. As is very often true with many of the good things in life, it's already a Me'iri. The Me'iri wasn't discovered until much later on, and many, many things that were propounded by the greats of the generations are to be found in the Me'iri, and he says this in his commentary, Beis HaBechira, to Maseches Megillah, Daf Dalet, Omid Beis. In our parlance, the Me'iri gives the answer of the Taz. And having already set the ball rolling, the Mefarshim take this principle and go with it. And there are a number of Mefarshim, amongst them the Prima Govim in his commentary Rosh Yosef to Maseches Brachos, and Shlomo Ganzfried, who of course we know is the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, who also wrote a commentary on various Masechtas, Penei Shlomo. They both say exactly the same thing. If you wish to unravel the mystery of why it is that Rashi maintains that there was never a prohibitive protective decree, leveled against burning the korbanos the whole night, take a look at the beginning of Parshas Tzav. Our pasuk, for how does it read? Tzav es Aaron, es bonav leimor, zos Torah ha'ola. Hi ha'ola, al mokta, on the moked, on the fire, ala mizbeach, Kol halayla ad haboker. Korbanos, the Torah says, they burn kol halayla until the morning. Now we know that if it's kol halayla, I mean the night ends when the morning is there. If you say kol halayla, you have in essence said ad haboker. Those two words, ad haboker, are redundant, but they are coming to underscore that kol halayla leaves no room for cutting back. Not in this mitzvah. The whole night means until the morning. This is another example of the principle of the Turei Zahav, whereby the Torah has expressly told you that this mitzvah, the whole night. And by the whole night we mean until the next morning, says Rashi, Rabbanan left it alone. That's very interesting, because it turns out that what becomes famous as the principle of the Taz, Im Kenim Hadvarim, is actually to be found within Rashi on the very first page of the Talmud. And that's a nice place to be. So there is much to discuss with regards to this Taz, but we mention it, we give it an honorable mention because of how it relates to the beginning of Parshas Tzav. Now, I want to move from the beginning of the Parsha towards the middle to certainly a very special, if one could use that expression, Korban, and that is the Korban Todah, and that's in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And how do we begin? Well, once again, we begin with Torah. V'zos Torah Zevach HaShlomim Asher Yakriv LaShem. Okay, so we're introducing generally Shlomim. And then Pasuk Yud Beis states, Im Al Toda Yakrivenu, if a person is bringing a thanksgiving offering, so this is how he should bring it, and it describes the whole procedure of the Korban Todah. Now, we know that the Korban Todah actually has certain unique elements to it. The bread that comes with it, right? There's 40 loaves of bread and various other things. And if that's true, then our intrigue is already sparked by the Parshanut presentation of this Korban. Because, in a sense, Korban Todah is a type of Shlomim, actually. It's a type, right? It exists, it's a subset within Shlomim. But it's quite unusual. It's an exceptional case. And if that's the situation, then it's a most unusual progression of psukim, because Pasuk Yud Aleph is introducing shlamim in general, and the very first korban is the exception to the rule. That would seem to be somewhat inverted than what we would expect, because it only goes on to say, and if it's a normal shlamim, so then that's the subsequent psukim, which is from Pasuk Tet Zayin. If it's a neder or nedava, it will go on to discuss the typical shlamim. And that's really the question. Why did you introduce shlamim as a general category and begin with the atypical korban? I would hesitate to call it the black sheep of the family. But then only then move to describe the typical shlamim. That's the question. That's interesting. One would have expected Zosaras HaShlamim, described the normal Shlamim, and if it's a Toda, then there are special halachas. Now, even within the Korban itself, we should note that descriptively, it actually has conflicting halachas. How can a Korban have conflicting halachas? What does that mean? What I mean is, there are two types of korbanos. As we know from our Ezu Mekomen in the morning, there's Kodshe Kodoshim, which is the higher category, and then Kodshim Kalim, literally lighter Kodshim. And you will find, as a rule, that the halachas, the status of the korban will be expressed in its laws, specifically how the avoda is done, and then how the korban is eaten. And so, for example, all of the higher level Kodshe Kodoshim, their avoda is specifically to the north of the Mizbeach. Shchitas v'batzofon, kibbol dam v'batzofon. Whereas if it's the lower level, relatively, it can be anywhere in the temple courtyard. That's one example. And also, with regards to the eating, Kodshe Kodoshim, the higher level, you only have one day. And Kodshim Kalim, the lower level, you tend to have 2 days for shlamim or whatever it is. And with that brief introduction, we now come to consider the korban todah, and we will find that there is no consistency. Because on the one hand, in terms of its avoda, it's like kodshim kalim. It can happen anywhere in the temple courtyard. It's not restricted like Kodshe Kodoshim. And the way that the blood is applied to the Mizbeach is also like Kodshim Kalim. So it sounds like we're headed for Kodshim Kalim, which makes perfect sense because it's a Shlomim. Peace offering is Kodshim Kalim. But on the other hand, we note that the time frame to eat the Korban Todah is much more restricted. It actually is more akin to Kodshe Kodoshim because it's only the day and the following night. So Korban Todah actually contains something of a contradiction, if we could condense that into one sentence. It has the avoda of the lower level, and then the eating of the higher level. So what is it, if we could ask? What is its status? And in fact, the Netziv discusses this in the Hamikdavar, and he states that the Korban Todah really, truly is a hybrid Korban. In other words, it does not purely fit into, or absolutely fit into either category. You cannot say it is absolutely Kodshe Kodoshim, and you cannot say absolutely Kodshim Kalim. It's on the border. And in fact, it's a hybrid korban. It has elements of both. And it's the only korban that has elements of both. And Rav Kupperman, in the Sefer Pshuto Shel Mikra, says that according to this analysis, according to this apprehension of a Korban Todah, we can well understand why Korban Todah is the first Korban mentioned here in Perek Zayin Pasuk Yud Beis. Because until now, we've been dealing exclusively with the higher level, with Kodshe Kodoshim, Chatos, and Asham, and Ola. Subsequently, we're about to move into Kodshim Kalim, to the lower level, Shlomim, and the like. And therefore, the ideal, so to speak, point of transition is the Korban Todah. because it's actually the bridge. It's the fusion of the two, where it yet has elements of Kodshei Kodashim in terms of the way that it's eaten, but it also has elements of Kodshim Kalim. And thus, we come to an understanding of this mysterious arrangement of psukim, whereby it's the exception to the rule, but it's mentioned first, because it's actually the bridge between the two types of korbanos. But if we come to consider that idea itself, that the time for eating the korban todah is more restricted, and if we may ask the question, well, why would that be so? If in principle it's meant to be a korban shlomim, so why is it not eaten like a korban shlomim? So to that, we must turn, of course, to the other unusual element of the korban todah, namely these 40 loaves of bread. When you bring a korban todah, you bring 40 loaves of bread. And where do they come from? And what do they do? So there's many different interpretations as to what is represented by the 40 loaves of bread, but however you interpret them, one thing is for sure, you cannot get around the fact that there are 40 of them. That's a lot. And this is discussed by the Sforno. And he says something amazing. Again, in his terse way, uvirvos halechem, with a profusion of bread, yisparsem hanes leochlim rabim. What is the Sforno discussing? There is a mitzvah to eat consecrated food. Moreover, there is a prohibition to leave it over. Now, a nice-sized family perhaps could do a good job on a korban, but you got 40 loaves of bread. It's a lot. What is the Torah telling you? The Torah is telling you, invite guests to help you, because you don't have a chance to eat these 40 loaves of bread by this time tomorrow. So invite people to your suda. Why? Because as a Sforno, what is a korban todah all about? Korban todah is thanksgiving. A person who gives thanks for a kindness that was done to him. So this is the origins in the Torah of the concept of suda sodah and persume nisa. Literally, the more the merrier. And it's not optional, because you don't have a chance of finishing all this by yourself. So make sure that you have plenty of friends invited to your su'uda. They'll help you. And the topic of conversation of the su'uda at a certain point will come to what is a su'uda all about. Very good. So it should. And the Torah wants many people to be there. That's persume nisa. And to this, of course, we add, not only did matter increase, but time decreased. Because you've got much more to eat and less time to eat it. And the moral of the story is, so rent out a nice-sized dining room, because you'll be having company this evening. And that's part of what it's all about. V'chulam ne'echolim bizman kodshei kodoshim shem le'yom v'layla. The korban todah is eaten like a time frame of kodshei kodoshim, just for a day and a night. And it's a fascinating way of understanding all of the extra food that comes with the korban todah. It's all heading towards the suda sodah. We've mentioned in passing, I'm sure, the comment of the Abarbanel. Again, we're not too far away from Pesach and the child, the manishtana. The first question is, b'chol halelos, onu oklim chomitz u'matzah, halayla zeh kulo matzah. Every night we eat chomitz u'matzah. And the Abarbanel, who has a peirush, Zevach Pesach on Nagodesh HaPesach, says, I don't know anyone who has chomitz matzah every night. What you may mean, perhaps, is on every night we can do what we want. And you can have chomitz or matzah. But we didn't say either or, like we will say later on, Bein Yoshvin, Bein Mesubim, which is either or. We said, no, we eat chomitz or matzah. When do we eat chomitz or matzah? Says the Abarbanel, the roots of the Manishtana are from the time of the Beis HaMikdash. When the child, by the time he gets to the Suda in the evening, he already has a chush for what this type of evening is about. He's seen it, but he will have seen it before. It's a Korban Todah evening. They brought a Korban, everyone's in Yerushalayim, everyone's getting together, and the child says, all of this seems familiar, I just have one shaila. Shebachol HaLeilos, on all other nights such as this, we eat chametz u'matzah. And we really do, because of the accompanying 40 loaves, some are chametz and some are matzah. Lo and behold, halayla hazeh kula matzah. It's a very interesting, if we would just give ourselves the context of how these questions come, the natural question for a child in the time of the Beis HaMikdash needs to be explained by scholars generations later. That's how it goes. And the approach of the Seforno as to the relationship of the Korban leading into the Seuda is adopted by the Netziv in the HaMikdavar, and in his own wonderful way explains to us and opens up for us the psukim that we say in Halo and the psukim that we will say mit Hashem on the successive days. At a certain point, the pasuk says Lecha ezbach zevach toda v'shem Hashem ekra nedarai l'Hashem ha'shalem negdano l'chalamo, and then concludes b'chatzur beis Hashem b'sochei Yerushalayim. The psukim, of course, we all know, and the Netziv asks two questions. Firstly, if we look again, it's interesting just to stop and think. Nidarai l'Hashem ha'shalem negdano l'chalamo. I will fulfill my vow to Hashem in front of everyone, says the Netziv. Since when is that such a positive value? A person's mitzvah, a person's avoda, is between him and Hashem. And yofa hatznius. Since when does David HaMelech seem to be, he's advertising the fact that I'm going to do my mitzvah and everyone's going to see? I mean, that's what the pasuk seems to be saying. And what's all the more perplexing is how does the pasuk conclude? Bechatzos beis Hashem besocheich Yerushalayim. Bechatzos beis Hashem is where? Where would we think the Chatzos beis Hashem are? I mean, everybody knows where they are. Chatzos beis Hashem is the courtyard of Hashem's house. If you don't know where the Beis HaMikdash is, you shouldn't be reading Hallel. You should probably be reading something more basic. So the additional besocheich Yerushalayim seems to be somewhat redundant. We know where Chatzos beis Hashem. And therefore, says the Netziv, and this is in the footnotes that he has on the HaMikdavar called the Harchev Davar, he says, very often in Parshanut, you find that there is a pasuk which introduces two things. And therefore the pasuk will have two halves, right? Each half introduces, you know, its own thing. Successive psukim should also be divided accordingly, whereby the first half of each successive pasuk is a qualification and elaboration of the first item that was originally mentioned. We would call it, for simplicity's sake, they have an A-B-A-B relationship. And what does that look now for these psukim? Says the Netziv, the truth of the matter is, a Korban Todah has two aspects to it. It has the Korbanos aspect, for sure, and that's Parshas Tzav. But then it also has the, when everybody gets together that evening, it's the Sudas Hodah. And those two elements of the Korban Todah are what are being referred to in that opening pasuk. Number one, Lecho Ezbach Zevach Todah, that's the Zevach Todah, the Avodas HaKorbanos. Number two, B'Shem Hashem Ekra. What does that mean, B'Shem Hashem Ekra? It means later on that evening, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, that means to be Mefarsim, the kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for me. That's the Suda in the evening. So those are the two things that have been introduced in that opening Pasuk. And the Pasuk proceeds to qualify them. For the next pasuk says, with regards to the first thing, Lecho Ezbach Zevach Todah, it says, Nedarai L'Hashem HaShalem. That's my neder between me and Hashem to bring that korban. And with regards to the second thing, B'Shem Hashem Ekra, the qualification is, Negdana L'Cholamo. Indeed, to be the farsim, the neis, the more the merrier. And the final qualification is, and where will all this happen? Well, where does it happen? Where is the korban brought? The korban is brought Bechatzros Beis Hashem. The Seuda happens B'Socheichi Yerushalayim. And thus you have an alignment, because the korban can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Doesn't have to eat in Mechatzus Beis Hashem. Thus, are the two parts of these psukim. They're actually vertically. They should be put one on top of the other, as the first half of each pasuk lines up, and the second half of each pasuk lines up. That's classic parshanut from the Netziv, and that section of Halel, all of a sudden, it literally assumes a new dimension. It's interesting to note, in our time, we don't have the Korban Todah, but we do yet mark occasions and events that would, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, require a Korban Todah, or lead to a Korban Todah. Arba'a Chayovim Lehodos, the people who travel through the desert, overseas, and if one who was ill or imprisoned. And we reflect that with a bracha, Birchas HaGomel. It's very interesting to note, and the nusach, the way that it's normally, that the bracha goes, is that the one who makes HaGomel says, HaGomel L'chayavim Tavo She'Gomelani Kol Tov. So Hashem has given me everything. That's what it sounds like. She'Gomelani Kol Tov. And the response is, Mi She'Gomelcha Kol Tov, V'Gomelcha Kol Tov Selah. Whoever gave you everything should give you everything. That's translating into English. And certain Meforshim raised the question. Normally, when somebody says something, when you respond, the owner is Mosif. I mean, what he says. So if you want to give him a bracha, so you should say that you should have more. Except it sounds like you can't have more because he's already said that he has everything. Hashem is Gomelani Kol Tov. So what do you wish a person who has everything? Well, some people say the answer is two of everything. But he's already said She'Gomelani Kol Tov. And we say Gomelcha Kol Tov. What are we adding? We should know the Siddur HaRav, that is to say the Siddur that was put together by the Balatanya, by the Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Chabad Rebbe. So his nusach was that the one who makes the bracha says, HaGomel HaChayim Tavo She'Gomelani Tov. Hashem did me a kindness, which is interesting because one could argue he didn't do you every kindness. I mean, not now. He did you a kindness. And if that's true, then they say, Misha Gamalcha Tov, Hui Gamalcha Kol Tov. That's the way that they answer according to the, you see the Onim are Mosif. Because that's the Derech, the Onim is always Mosif. If someone says to you, Shalom, you say to them, Shalom Uvracha. And so it goes. So he says Sheikh Malani Tov, and you wish him Kol Tov. Others say, by the way, interestingly, that the people who respond, they do add something. What they add is probably the word that's hardest to translate. He said Sheikh Malani Kol Tov, and we say the one who gave you Kol Tov, Huyik Malcha Kol Tov, Sela. Now what does Sela mean? If I'm not mistaken, there are certain, even English translations, that just leave the word Sela untranslated. They just write Sela. And somehow they get away with it. But Sela is a word. And according to many, Sela means continuously. It's when you're misalsel, is to continue something. And therefore, that's what those who answer add on. The one who so far has given you Kol Tov, may he give you Kol Tov Sela, always. That's the Hosafa. It's very interesting. Because normally the word Sela, we're not sure what to do with it. It's almost like we don't know what it means. It just means, have a nice day. But Sela means continuously. There's a very interesting explanation of the response of the Kahal. Hashem has given you Kol Tov, you Gemalcha Kol Tov Sela. What are they wishing him? And this is to be found in the introduction of the Sefer Shalmei Nedarim. Shalmei Nedarim is one of the classic commentaries from the Acharonim on Maseches Nedarim, and is in his introduction he speaks about this, and he says, you know, we find often in Torah that sometimes if a person has been shown undue kindness or excessive kindness, it can sometimes eat away at their merits. And that's the worry back to Parshas Vayishlach of Yaakov Avinu, katonti, katonti mikol achasodim. In other words, Hashem has given me so much kindness, I have to fear that I've been diminished. Nisma'atu zuchuyosai. And therefore, there's a wonderful bracha that you can give to someone. When he makes the bracha of Hagomel and he says, Hashem has done me a great kindness. So when the Kahal answers and says, Hashem who gave you that great every kindness, Hu yigmalcha kol tov selam, means in the future, he should also grant you every kindness. In other words, the wish on the part of the Kahal is that this kindness should not be at the expense of that which is waiting for you in the future. It shouldn't diminish or detract from your zechuyos. Hu yigmalcha kol tov selam. If we conclude, perhaps, by referring to, once again, in a broader sense, to Sefer Vayikra, we've discussed a certain specific korbanos, and Vayikra is Toras Kohanim, and, of course, it takes on an additional significance, additional meaning, for us who do not currently have korbanos befoal, in practicality. And, in fact, that is the final message in Maseches Menachos and Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, and it's based on a pasuk in this week's parsha, Perek Zayin, pasuk Lamed Zayin. Zos HaTorah, this is the, in a sense, the concluding pasuk. Zos HaTorah, La'ola, La'mincha, V'la'chatas, V'la'osham, V'la'miluim, This is the Torah of all of those things. And, of course, in Bepashtus it means these are the laws, but it's a concluding pasuk, and from a certain point of view, if it wasn't there, we would just go on to discuss the next thing. Not every section has its concluding pasuk, that the Torah doesn't need to announce that we finished. You'll know that we finished by the virtue of the fact that we go on to talk about something else. And that's why the Gemara says, Zos HaTorah means this Torah can, under certain circumstances and to a certain degree, simulate or approximate the experience of the Korban itself. And thus Rish Lakish says, Zos HaTorah La'ola, a person who involves himself in the Torah of the Ola, Ki'ilu Hikriv Ola. L'chatos, Ki'ilu Hikriv Chatos. And thus we have an entirely new element to the reading of the Torah and the learning of these parshios. Not only do we have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah and we follow the weekly parsha, but when the subject at hand is korbanos, there is the added, a person who's involved in these korbanos has the effect of simulating the bringing of a korban. It is not a substitute ultimately for the korban itself. If a person, certainly at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, is required to bring a Korban Chatos, he cannot just content himself by delving into the halachas of Korban Chatos. He would need to bring a Korban Chatos. Moreover, even in this time, in our time when there's no Korbanos, there's the famous case of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, discussed in Masechah Shabbos in Daf Yud Beis, whereby the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Lo yikra adam lo or haner, a person shouldn't read in those days by the light of a lamp, Shemayate, the Brisa explains. Perhaps he will incline it. He gets engrossed in his reading, and if the light flickers, he'll move the lamp a little bit, and which of course is a malacha of havara, to improve the quality of the fuel consumption. That's havara. That's a malacha. And the Gemara talks about it, so with reverence we can talk about it. Rabbi Shmuel said, and he was of the Tanoi. Rabbi Shmuel says, Ah, ani ekra, velo ate. If the reason is, maybe you'll come to incline the lamp, so I'll take care, and I'll read, and I won't incline the lamp. Says the Gemara, it does not take a long time over the story, Kara Vihito, he read and inclined the lamp, meaning he relied on his awareness, but he got engrossed in his reading, and then he ended up inclining the lamp. And when Shabbos went out, he wrote in his pinkas, in his notebook, he says, I, Yishmael ben Elisha, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, b'meher b'yameinu, I owe the Beis HaMikdash a chatos shmeina, a fat chatos. Those were his words. There's a fascinating comment of Rav Nosson Adler. Rav Nosson Adler was one of the two rebbes of the Chasam Sofer. And the Chasam Sofer quotes in his name. It's interesting. I mean, maybe you feel bad, but why does it have to be a fat chatos? A person isn't yotze if it's a thin chatas, or lean, or medium size. Chatas shmeina. It's very specific. Says Benosan Adler, yes. Because he also wanted to get kapara not only for the Aveira, the malacha of Havara that he did, but he was over to Rabbanon. Because the Rabbanon said you shouldn't have read in the first place. Now you don't bring a chatas, you don't bring a separate korban. But he wanted to bring a gezunta chatas for the malacha in order to incorporate the original infraction of a derabbanon. If a person is over on the deraisa, brings a chatas. A deraisa and a derabbanon, so bring a chatas shmeina. Very interesting. But what we see clearly is that, of course, on a practical level, the learning of the will never substitute the bringing of the korban itself, but it certainly achieves a significant quality of the korban process itself. And this remains true not only from the Talmud and Menachos there in Daf Kuf Yud, anyone who's involved in the Torah of this korban, like you brought a korban, but there is a parallel Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph Omid Beis, and also Tainus and Daf Kaf Zayin Omid Aleph, whereby Avram Avinu in the Bris Ben HaBesorim, and his question is, how will my descendants survive? And the answer was to take all of those korbanos, kecholi egla mishuleshes, ve'egla, etc. And the answer was korbanos. And says the Gemara, so Abed Avram says, but they won't always be able to bring korbanos. And the answer to that was, but they'll always have Torah sakorbanos. And this gives us a new insight into the learning about korbanos. They yet are part of what keeps the Jewish people going. However, the mysterious technology of korbanos works that keeps the Jewish people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is something that we may not always set aside time for korbanos, but as we enter Sefer Vayikra the parshas are all dealing with korbanos, it's certainly something we appreciate, and we hope that this will lead us to a level of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and all of the effects of the korbanos, as many as can be fulfilled. Certainly, we do not need reminders of the fact that we are yet in Golos, that we are yet waiting for the Geula. Certainly, we do not need to be reminded through human korbanos that we heard about to our horror today. And Mitzvah Hashem, we should apply ourselves and invest ourselves to the learning of the Torah and Torah's HaKorbanos, and that should lead us back to korbanos in actuality and the Geula Shalema. B'mehir B'Aminu.